This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Today's show is presented by DaVinci Smart Drink. Order yours now at lineupmedia.fm/DaVinci. DaVinci, excite better thinking.
Need a mental boost? DaVinci Smart Drinks were designed with professional thinkers in mind. With key ingredients shown to improve cognitive function and increase mental energy, DaVinci Smart Drinks excite better thinking. Drink a DaVinci. Let it go to your head.
What the hell's going on out here?
Luke's scared because his eyelids are jammed and his old man's here. We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present. Is that about right?
That's right.
We're dealing with a lot of shit.
Anyone ever tell you you look like a penis with a little hat on?
You're out of here!
Oh, no,
right
no, no,
now,
no,
Jimmy, I heard
you misunderstood
that!
Misunderstood.
Why? What do you mean, why? We're in the championship, aren't we? Well, that's what you wanted, wasn't it? Now, just behave yourselves and act like men.
I'm not much for giving inspirational addresses. The local press seems to think we'd save everyone a lot of time and trouble if we just went out and shot ourselves.
You play ball like a girl!
I think you're a loser.
I'm a bum!
Hello, my fellow Bleacher Bums in baseball land. This is one part of your team, Jimbo. Let me welcome in my good friend, Tony Hubert. What's up, bud?
How you doing? We got baseball underway. I love watching the games now in the afternoon.
Isn't it awesome?
MLB Network.
Yeah, I'm floating here at the office.
Floating from Florida out to Arizona.
Well, we are the Bleacher Bums, and we would encourage you to make sure you check out our awesome website, bleacherbumspodcast.com. It's where you'll find the podcast. It's where you can subscribe to the podcast. Very simple to do on your PC. You'll see it on the right. If you're on your mobile device, you'll just scan down and hit subscribe to the podcast. It is free, and we do enjoy bringing it to you each and every week. Of course, Facebook and Twitter with social media is a great way for us to stay engaged with you guys. At Bums Podcast on Twitter is where you'll find us. And if you're a baseball fan, we are going to follow you back, so make sure you follow us on Twitter and, of course, Facebook, Bleacher Bums Podcast. We appreciate all the great things that you guys are doing out there for the game of baseball. And thanks to our friends here at lineupmedia.fm for hosting us each and every week and letting us be a part of their great network. Podcasting is the wave of the future, folks, and you want to listen to things when you want to listen to them. Go to lineupmedia.fm. I guarantee you you'll find a show that you find interesting that may tickle your entertainment bone in another fashion. Tony, you do a great show every day. This Day in History, I find it fascinating, and it's also a way to stay on top and learn a little bit, but at the same time, interesting facts that you may not have known. It's just it's a great thing there as well, too.
I find it fascinating, too. I'm thinking about doing one just on This Day in Baseball History.
That would be amazing because, again, I think there's a faction of people that really like the whole old school.
You know, Fred Merkel passed away on this date, like in 1958.
Did
you know
really?
That? Yep.
Wow.
Yep. 50 years after his boner.
Unbelievable. Well,
you ever hear of Merkel's boner?
Go ahead.
1908.
1908.
World Series.
Tell us all about it.
I had to look up the exact play, but he basically cost the New York Giants World Series.
Well, he suffered a little bit there. I mean, he took a beating for that one. No. But, hey, the game of baseball is you know, it's an amazing game that we love as both fans, as people that are engaged with our teams or just in baseball across. I got to tell you, a couple things. You and I were talking today, and I'm going to throw you a curveball.
Sure. Hit me.
Because you're like, okay, Jim, what do we got today? And I said, okay, well, obviously, and these are the things we're going to cover. I know there's a big, heavy sigh going on right now in Boston as David Price is going for a second opinion with Dr. Andrews, which is never a good sign. So there's that proverbial sigh. Once again, Rob Manfred's at it again and wants to make more changes. And if you cannot tell by now, I don't do well with change. So we're going to talk. Even though this one, I think I get. I don't have a problem with this one, I guess. We'll see. But, man, I got to tell you, I knew we were going to touch on this, and while I was doing a little bit of research, just while we were coming into the show, I'm fascinated by this because I got to get your thoughts on this. Have you been following this this trial for illegal, I guess, trafficking of a human that these agents are going under for the smuggling operation for baseball players?
Yeah,
like
I hope
Cuba?
They all get locked up because this is not funny. It's not cute. It's not just an interesting aside story. This is real human trafficking. And it's really dangerous, and it's abhorrent.
Okay.
And I had read, I think about a year ago, Jimbo, a long expose on how Yasiel Puig came from Cuba via Mexico. And now, you know, the news on Jose Abreu, and of course, eating the passport, which, again, that interesting in itself once you get to the cover. I don't know how you do that. But look, when you see this story in social media, do not take it lightly. This is serious. This is serious. These are real criminals acting in a criminal manner. Not the players, the traffickers. And we've got clubs, you know, and these intermediaries dealing with these people. And look, I don't want to close the avenue for great young Cuban talent to get to the major leagues. But there has to be. Someone needs to step in and do something to cut this black market pipeline off.
Well, I think we're getting there. I would you not agree? I mean, there's been changes of things that are getting there. Is this another situation where baseball kind of buried its head in the sand and contributed to this problem? Because I'm going to tell you that while I'm on board with you and I understand it wholeheartedly,
yeah.
I know where you're going with this. This has got an eerie feeling, though, of one of those types of things. It's like, yeah, there's no doubt that what they're doing is wrong, but man, just listen to Jose Abreu talk about it. He's like, look, it was my idea. I wanted to go over there and make money and play baseball. I went to them and said, hey, can you get me over there?
Well, sure.
So
it doesn't matter who initiates
it, though.
I know,
but my point is ultimately in this particular instance, all they did was find a way to get a baseball player from Cuba to America so that he could enact on a federal law with the wet foot, dry foot policy,
yeah.
which has since been rescinded by, ironically, President Obama. He rescinded it. Okay.
Right.
But what's interesting about it is it's just a guy that wanted to come over and play baseball. Now, here's the interesting thing. Why did he do this? Very simple, right? He had a $68 million contract waiting for him to come over here and sign, and he had to sign it. Otherwise, it was null and void. So we got a chicken and egg thing going on here, Tony.
We do.
Okay.
But we also have a professional, like, boxer thing going on. We got, like, Buster Douglas. I got paid $30 million for that fight. How much did you ever see of that? Oh, about $300,000.
Well, I would
These are just leeches, Jimbo.
I know. I got it.
They're leeches, man. I don't want the State Department getting involved or anything like that. But my Lord, come on, baseball. Yeah, was their head in the sand? Yeah, because it feels a lot like, you know what? We're better off not knowing how
this happens.
We don't want to see how the pork sausage is made. We just want the end result.
Because the net result or the fact here is that a Major League Baseball organization, franchise, if you will,
mm-hmm.
had a $68 million contract on the table for a guy to come sign if he can gain illegal access into our country.
Yeah.
So you tell me how Major League Baseball isn't a little bit at fault here as well.
I'm not going to tell you that. What I'm going to tell you is I think you're culpable. I think you're partly responsible. If you're throwing $68 million out there into this world, you better be responsible for where that money is going to wind up. And if that money is going to wind up in a trafficking cartel or a drug cartel or some combination of both, you got some answering to do. And you got some answering to do not to fans. You have some answering to do to Department of Justice officials potentially. Money laundering and this kind of thing, these are serious things in these days and times. People want to know, especially officials, governments want to know where is money coming from and going to. Because with terrorist financing, with drug financing, with all of this, people have an interest and a big interest. So to prime the pump more by throwing millions and more dollars at this, if you want the player so bad, why don't you hire a bunch of former Navy SEALs and go grab them out of Cuba yourself? Why don't you pull your own extraction mission?
That's kind of where I'm at with this. It's like, where's the, you know, barring now Major League Baseball taking steps, and I think they're, and again, I couldn't recite the whole changes that they've made for the international draft and things like that, because it's still not perfect, and people think it's as easy as, we'll just change it. Well, there's a lot of intricacies and things where you might be fixing this part, but then you'd be hindering this part.
Yeah,
people have rights.
And these were collectively bargained things as well with your
union.
People
have rights.
That's true.
You know, so in Chicago, White Sox would say, listen, we're just a we're just an independent contractor here. The guy happens to be able to mash a baseball. If he happens to land on American soil, we'd like to offer him $68 million for his services. If he doesn't, well, then we'll move on and onward and upward. And again, to think that they weren't somehow involved in this.
But other countries deal with this in terms of athletics.
Sure.
Okay. The United Kingdom deals with this in terms of foreign nationals coming to play in the Premier League. They have some very strict rules about, you know, okay, if you're gonna bring a guy in and pay him this, you know, why can't we pay the English football player this? You know, and again, I want to see the talent pool in baseball get better and better and better. And if that means more players from around the world, like the NBA has done so well, so be it. But to feed a system that is illegal and dangerous is never wise. Wait till a story surfaces of somebody who was in one of these trafficking situations and either gets killed or dies in transit.
Well, and they will.
It'll happen.
But
if this continues.
Okay, but here's my thought on that, Tony. That happens, I'm not going to say on the daily. That happens often to people that can't play baseball.
That does. That happens.
Because they're trying to come to a better life.
That happens to, it's happened to Cuban people fleeing their country as far back as the 60s and 70s.
For sure.
It's happened to Syrians here in the past 2 to 3 years, just trying to make it away from Syria to another Mediterranean spot, whether it's Cyprus or Greece. I mean, they're just taken to the ocean. Okay. But the ball player is different because someone wants him. So there's motivation to either arrange to get them or go get them or have some third party that you don't want to know about do it. I would encourage everybody, go back, and I think it's the Los Angeles Times, amongst others, the Yasiel Puig expose of how he was brought to the United States is an eye-opener.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, and this is why I find this all fascinating, the Yasiel Puig one is very interesting, obviously, because it is – you know, it's right out of – there's another sport that we're all familiar with, the NHL. The Russian Mafia and their involvement with these players that had come over years ago.
There you go.
I mean, you talk about scary. And that's real.
Go ask Bury and Mogilny,
yes,
right? Or is it Bury?
Well, listen, I happen to know a guy that played over there.
In the KHL?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, in one of the other leagues.
Oh, okay.
And they're all owned by the Mafia.
Yeah,
you know, they pay them in cash and rubles. So, I mean, they have to hide their money because they'll steal it from them after they play.
Sure.
It's the most unbelievable thing ever. So it's real and it is going on. But on that note, what I find really interesting about this particular story, okay, yes, the Yasiel Puig story is outrageous, right? Jose Abreu got on an airplane,
mm-hmm.
flew to Miami,
yeah.
got off the airplane and said, "I'm here."
Yeah,
I don't know.
Situation's different.
I know.
Because of
sure.
diplomatic things. Like, for instance, if I get a visa now, I couldn't do this 2 years ago, Jimbo. You'll never do it because you don't fly. But Southwest is advertising flights to Cuba. I just need to go get the correct visa. So at Tampa Bay, when I change planes, I'm good to go. In 2014 or 2013, that was unthinkable.
Well,
So he's dealing, you know, Abreu is already in a different world than everyone who came before him. And still, it may not be as easy for everyone else just to show up on Miami and say, "I'm here."
Yeah. No, you're right.
And I'm not going to get political, but we all know that the DHS is asking a lot of questions of incoming people. So what do you think a Cuban getting off a plane in Florida might experience?
Well, again, I think I'm at this point now where I look at it and say, what are we doing to correct this problem? Because it's always like when a problem rears its ugly head, we got to deal with it, right? So hopefully they'll get this one figured out. We have a problem within the game of baseball with some of these rule changes that are going on. Rob Manfred, you sent me, has got another idea.
This is a beauty.
Well, this is a beauty. Because I got to be honest with you on this one. I think I get it.
I get it, too. I don't know if it will resolve everything.
But the unwritten rules of baseball are very well known to the players because we don't know what they are all
well,
time. Like, we always wonder what they really are. I think even the players get confused of what the unwritten rules are, but there are some that are and aren't. And if you have been a Cardinal fan at any time in your life, You have lived through a couple instances in big games where a opposing pitcher,
game two of the World Series,
noticeably has a foreign substance either on his person or in his glove, or I guess that would be on your person.
Yeah.
And we get told, while it's plainly visible thanks to modern technology.
Well, thanks to high-definition television.
Thanks to high-definition television. What we get told here is that everybody does it. It's widely acceptable. And this is my favorite. It is not an advantage. In fact, the hitters would rather these pitchers have access to this pine tar or rosin or whatever, this concoction they make with supposed suntanning lotion and something, so that when it's cold, they can grip the baseball better. And the hitters will tell you, I would rather them be able to have pinpoint control than kill me. So I find that interesting. But it's another one of these things where, okay, well, then get rid of the rule. Well, we can't do that, because then if we get rid of the rule, then guys could put stuff in there to help them alter the ball to give them an advantage. And I said, well, so what you're telling me is somehow it's not an advantage in cold weather if this guy can't grip the ball and can't pitch as well. And what they'll tell you is, well, what I'm telling you is nobody can grip the ball that well in cold weather, so they all do it. And it's like, okay, well, if you're all doing it, then we need to figure out something. So Rob Manfred this time has actually said, okay, well, stop short of allowing people to put a foreign substance, which we can't regulate, I guess.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to have umpires going out to the mound all
the
time
slow down
saying,
the game.
Well, you're going to say, what is that? Is that pine tar and rosin, or is that Vaseline?
You're going to take it to the lab.
What do we do? Yeah, that's right. What
are you going to test it?
Lab? He says, why don't we just do this? How about if we get a ball with a better grip?
Sticky now, ball.
Now, listen, I've come to realize that I'm getting older, and I don't put anything past anybody anymore. If they can come up with a baseball that performs as a normal ball and has a little bit of a tackier grip, hey, kumbaya.
So I have two thoughts on this.
Okay.
And I don't think
only two.
No, I might have three. Bear this out. In theory, Manfred's on to something.
Yes.
And I think the players would support it. I have a couple questions about it as well. A regular baseball does not have a very long life expectancy in a game as it is now. So once one of these balls is hit a couple times, you know, grounded to short, depending on how sticky is it, how usable is it after it's been put in play, especially if it goes through the dirt portion of the infield. Because if it's sticky, I'm going to assume the dirt's going to stick to it. Now, for those of you who go to a lot of Major League Baseball games, we all know how scuffed the ball gets after one at-bat or one foul ball. Anyone who's ever gotten a foul ball.
And I don't think people understand why that is. I'm going to tell you why that is.
It gets scuffed incredibly hard.
Okay, and people are – I know, because I've sat there, people that don't know. And it's not a thing like, oh, you don't know because you didn't play the game. No, that's not
it. No, it's not it.
What you don't know is that baseball – again, what are we talking about right now? We're talking about things that have changed in the game of baseball. Well, let me tell you something that has changed. The field that they play on has changed.
It has.
What they now have is a mixture. It's not just dirt, folks.
No, it's not
dirt. There's all kinds of stuff in it. I believe the term that they use, I think it's called Turfix or Turfus or something like that.
It is an aggregate of materials.
It is, yes. And let me tell you something. If you've ever been on a Major League Baseball field, I am here to tell you it's like concrete.
It's hard.
It is hard as a rock, and there's noticeable.
Here's how I would
speckle
describe it.
Looking things in it.
Remember the game you play at a bar where you take the big metal thing,
the disc,
and you push it down the wood, and the wood has that sawdust.
Yeah,
that's what a Major League Baseball infield is like to me.
Yes, it's got the little granular looking things on it, and basically when the ball hits it, if it hits it, it'll scuff it.
Yes, it will.
And my only assumption in the game of baseball is that what they decided was that pitchers, as good as they are, if you wouldn't allow the hitter to ask for a new ball after it was thrown in the dirt, a good pitcher would throw the ball in the dirt once and then have a scuff ball to play with. Because I assume they get away from the spirit of the rule on it, because I've always said 100 times over, well, what about that line drive the guy hits that hits the infield dirt? That ball scuffed, and it comes right back in play.
Yes.
So – but that is a result of an actual game play versus a pitcher possibly purposely throwing a ball in the dirt to scuff it.
I would also say this about on this topic before I get get back to mine. If you want to really see, spend a couple innings watching the home team bat boy. The home team bat boy gets the balls back from foul balls and whatnot that stay in play, don't go into the seats, okay? And he'll bring the balls to the umpire because what the pitcher wants, he wants a scuff ball.
Sure he does.
Okay, but and then watch when the bat boy brings balls to the umpire later in the game, because early everything's fresh. Later, you got about 90 balls, I think. Is it 6 dozen, 8 dozen balls per game?
I don't know that answer, but
okay. And you'll see umpires go through the balls later in a game and toss it out. Then the bat boy has to go back and throw it in a bin, and that becomes the BP ball, which then gets stamped with the initials BP. Because if you ever get a batting practice foul ball or home run ball, you should look, and it should say BP on it somewhere.
Well, again, to your point on that, think about the ball that's thrown from short to first and is short hopped.
Oh, perfect scuff.
You know, perfect scuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's amazing.
So that's one. The next thing, I don't know if you need to change anything about the ball itself in terms of the hide that Manfred wants to do. All the balls are rubbed up with the Delaware mud before the game. Why not spray hairspray or something on the ball and let it dry that gives it that stickiness?
Well, obviously they're going to check. My assumption is going to be, I'm not going to say they're going to do hairspray. They might. I'm not saying one way or the other.
Hairspray is often used for sticky.
Okay, but my point on that is they're going to do a variety of things and test them is my assumption.
They should, and that's great. So I think they can introduce – I think logistically speaking, they can introduce something like this. However, if the goal is to get the foreign substance out of the game, it won't. Because no matter what, somebody will want more of an advantage.
Sure. Now
this is true of any sport. Sport I used to be well acquainted with, NASCAR. They make all these rules about everything, and still someone will come up with something that's just – one little bit better, and then they have to go back and readjust the rule book.
Well, where I applaud them on this one is I think what he's really doing is what I asked all along. If everybody's doing it, then just make it legal. And then they said, well, we can't make it legal because, again, it opens up the – so I actually applaud them for saying, okay, well, we know we have a problem here because everybody's doing it.
Right.
According – and, again, this is where I give them a little bit of credit. According to the players,
yes,
this is necessary. So we need to do something.
Is it going to stop a pitcher from?
Well, no. But now the difference is that if they address it because of that issue and that issue alone of when it's cold we can't grip the balls. So if Major League Baseball says we have now addressed this issue, now going forward, if you are caught with a foreign substance in your glove, even if supposedly it's to help make it safer,
you're out.
So okay. That's.
But therein lies the problem, Jimbo. It's going to have to be policed now, and what Major League umpires always seem loath to do to me is that type of policing. They don't want any part of it. It's a pain in the ass. It's paperwork for them. It brings the league office into play. It brings them into play. It gets them in a bad situation with the manager and the player.
Well,
and
you
all
said it
hell
yourself,
breaks
though.
Loose.
You said it yourself, though. Everybody's always looking for an advantage. I guarantee you that if light is brought to this, they won't even need any help. Somebody will be letting them know, hey, you may want to check his glove. We got it on camera. It's coming. Well, everything's good. Video.
But,
everything's
but even,
coming.
Even in the day, when Whitey would play the mind games, when Whitey Herzog, hey, go check Daryl's bat. Go check Hojo's bat.
Oh, yeah.
No, fully knowing there was nothing wrong with the bat.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but
well,
that's fine.
Sometimes. Sammy Sosa, that's a different story. But, you know, come on. That's part of the game, man.
Sure.
That's part of the game. I'd like to see how this works. I'm kind of interested.
Hojo's still, to this day, the first guy that I'm confident was using.
Steroids?
Yeah.
No, long before Hojo there, guys.
Well, no. The guy that I'm sure of.
Oh. Well, maybe. I don't know.
That was like him and Brady Anderson were my first two that I'm sure of.
Well, when suddenly you hit 52 home runs as a leadoff guy, that, you know. So the baseball one, I like the story. It's interesting.
You know, we may get a new baseball out of this, folks. Who knows?
Sticky ball. Does this help hitters at all?
Well, I don't know.
From the standpoint of the pitcher having a better grip. What really happens to the ball? And I've seen the slow motion photography
at
the point of impact. Would a sticky ball help
the friction? Yes, I don't know.
Keep the ball
from jumping off the bat,
from either jumping off the bat or spinning as it connects with the bat.
Well, my guess is going to be thanks to the wonderful robot that they have that hits the ball and does everything at the exact same speed. They'll be able to have a machine that'll throw the ball, and then they'll have the machine that hits the ball. And they will be able to check RPM. They'll be able to check distance, you know, exit speed, all that.
Because here's what I don't want. If the ball is going to create more air friction for fly balls, it's not going to travel as well.
That's what I would think.
Okay. So there's other things in play here.
Manipulating the ball does a lot to it, no matter what you do.
Right. For instance, bigger seams on the ball, that's something very few people talk about. Balls with raised seams, you're going to have a hard time hitting home run.
Well, yes. Look what – okay, so if you're familiar at all with college baseball, you know, to get away from those home runs that were flying out, they changed the bats. They dummied them down, basically.
They dummied the bat down.
To make it more like wood. Now, it's still aluminum, and you still get the benefit of the aluminum, especially like on chink hits and things like that. What you don't get is the sweet spot being the length of the barrel. The sweet spot now has been dummied down to where – a person that hits it on the sweet spot will be rewarded. If not, it tends to act like a wooden bat.
It's a 300-foot fly ball.
Okay, so what they've done, though, is that they realized they did that, and then they basically cut their nose off to spite their face because then they had less offense. People weren't as excited about it.
We were going through College World Series where for days on end, no one was hitting one out of the park.
So what did they do instead of changing the bats back because they don't want to open Pandora's box?
Change the ball.
And what did they do to the ball? They lowered the seams. They didn't make it harder. They didn't do anything to it.
Two things happened. I will always keep coming when they say the ball is doctored. Yeah, but not in the way you think. The ball is more consistent, the seams are tighter, and the seams are lower. And a lot of that has to do with moving the ball to Costa Rica when Rawlings manufactured it there. It's simple. What do pitchers do when they get a ball? They start playing with the seams. They want the seams raised, get better – two things. One, better grip for you, more air resistance to get movement on the ball.
Right.
You lower the seams, less air resistance, ball travels straighter, ball gets hit, ball travels straighter and farther. That's good for the game, I think.
Well, sure. And again, I find it interesting. I've said it on here numerous times on different shows or whatever that the ball plays a big part of it. It is evolving. It's ever changing. It's interesting. You know, you feel like you're a grandpa. Well, back in my day, they da-da-da-da-da. The truth of the matter is it's always changing. Even modern-day players that have just retired will tell you, you know, they were in the league for 15 years. The ball probably changed 10 times for them during that time frame. Every one year they'd pick it up, and they're like, man, it is noticeably harder this year. Or for some reason, the seams seem more this year. Or da-da-da-da-da-da-da. They do this stuff based on a variety of reasons. Sometimes it is just, let's face it, the balls are made where they're made. You know?
And think of things like a slight manufacturing change.
Just one minor.
Let's say the gauge of the thread is just imperceptibly thicker that the ball is wound with. Well, there's a change.
Right.
Right? You know, what about how the ball is stitched itself versus – because it's hand-stitched. It's not machine-stitched as far as I know, unless they've changed that.
Yeah,
but what if you, Jimbo, are a better, tighter stitcher than I am?
That's right. And still, the one thing that gets talked about every blue moon, the romantic thing about baseball, and you brought it up, is the mudding them up from the Delaware mud.
Yeah.
Just an interesting thing that I guarantee a lot of people don't know.
Well, I know this because I knew the clubhouse boys used to have to do this. And it's a, you know, the umpires, you know, the broadcast, they'll say, oh, you know, the umpires have, no, clubhouse boys do it. You know, the ball comes out of the box. The leather has a treatment on it.
Yes.
For what reason, Jim, I don't know. But you want to get that shine and sort of gloss.
Yes.
And it's not a lot. But you want to get the surface of the ball into that sort of how do you even describe it?
Used, but not used.
You don't want it looking like a new car seat.
Right.
That you don't want. You want it looking like a used car seat of about 5 years of a guy who's a construction worker who has slid across that car seat, leather, be it, with Levi jeans. Okay? You want it not roughed up to the point where it's disintegrating.
You want it scuffed with no scuffs.
You want it, yeah. You want it scuffed with no real scuffs that are going to affect it as it travels through the air.
Because if you've ever had the opportunity to hold a brand new Major League Baseball out
good.
Of a wrapper,
it's not nice.
It feels, you know, it looks nice. Very,
looks nice.
Very pristine. Very pristine.
Very pristine.
But very slippery as well. It feels like to me now.
Now, why? I don't know.
I don't know either.
Why does that have to be?
I don't know. So, not like, listen, and let me reiterate this. Not slippery like I'm going to drop it out of my hand. But I know what's done with it, okay? And I could see how these guys would be like, okay, there needs to be something done with it. So, hence the Delaware mud.
Yeah.
And to your point, like anything, it's done by humans. Each one's going to be different. Have you ever watched a baseball game and watched the pitcher continually throw balls back when the umpire
Absolutely.
Throws him balls? Got a bad batch. We had an incident. We had an incident here with the Cardinals where Chris Carpenter just would not take no for an answer that Cincinnati wasn't playing mind games with the balls they were throwing in for the Cardinals to use so that they couldn't control the balls because they weren't scuffed properly.
Look, you've coached Little League, as have I. You ever show up at a tournament where all of a sudden they're using the soft ball?
Well, no.
And I don't mean the soft. I mean, you know, the ball with that rubber coating.
I have, fortunately, no, that never
happened. Oh, my God.
To me,
you know what we do? When our fans get a foul ball, we say, keep it. We throw a real ball back in. And we've had the kid. Look, if 12-year-olds can pick up on this, you know the major leaguers are all over it because they'll come back and say, hey, these are like kiddie balls or something. What the hell's going on here?
Well, and again, I can't, I can't speak for the people that are taxed with mudding the balls. But the truth of the matter is, I always do find it interesting.
And here's another. You know, the Delaware mud is gray. Basically, it's not mud like
well,
you.
I mean,
it's river silt. Is what?
Are
it
we
is.
Ever going to run out of Delaware mud?
No, because more silt's being produced where they get it, so it kind of renews itself.
Well, see, you learned something today, folks.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need a ton. I used to watch, I want to forget his name, Mark Walsh or Kurt at the Busch Stadium would be in charge of going through the balls for the game, you know? And, yeah, you just, you know, put it in your hand.
Wipe the ball,
here,
set it down.
Here, you know that?
Yep.
Rub it through. You're getting that gloss off the ball.
Huh.
You know, and where, you know.
Oddly enough, it's always one of the things I would have liked to have seen happen is I'd like to see him put the mud on the ball just because I've always been curious.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's interesting. But, you know, again, this is one that I understand what he's doing. Again, I'm on record. I don't know what they're doing with some of these other things and who, you know, they've notified the union now. They've given them their year notice that they plan on raising the strike zone, you know, that they want to implement this other stuff.
Jim, half our lives are over. You and I are both approaching 50 in a couple years. How many times have we heard this?
Yeah.
It's white noise to me.
Well,
it's just white noise to me.
Well, you know, there's a big difference, though, Tony, between saying we're on our umpires about calling the strike zone and actually raising the strike zone. That's a different. We'll see what happens because that's going to be a tough one.
I got another thing I want to talk about.
Okay.
So spring training, one of my favorite times of year. Because you can learn so much baseball in spring training just by watching it, paying attention. Now, I know this is a league-wide show, but interesting note came out of St. Louis. Adam Wainwright, who's recovering from, you know, big injury, of course, he asked for more starts in spring training. Now, a lot of starting pitchers really only want three or four starts and they feel they're good. Adam's asked for five. Now, it's not that you're going to stretch yourself out and start pitching more innings or anything like that. You know, he'll still, like, I assume he'll still pitch. The first two starts will be two innings, 40 pitches, then up to three innings.
He threw two innings today. So
he
yes.
threw two today?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think it's to go through the routine more as he's making a comeback from being off a year versus physically trying, because I got to imagine physically everybody's in good shape. But what you have to do is more of your regular, okay, this is my routine in between starts, day before routine, day of routine, and that type of thing.
I got to be honest. I don't know. I guess what I would say is that they all probably prepare in the off season. Now, I mean, that's legendary is the whole unlike the old days, they don't show up in spring training to get in baseball shape. They're already
over.
In shape.
That's over.
They've already shown up. They're ready to go. Now they obviously time out their bullpen so that they're ready to go by the start of the season. That we know. We know that
that's
they
true.
Have the whole 6 week out thing.
Yeah.
But before that, it's a lot of training. But the reality of it is, I think each person's situation is different. I don't know if maybe this had something to do with him having a down year last year and he feels like maybe this is what he needs. If I'm not mistaken, Wainwright, he had the Tommy John surgery, and then there was a lot of talk when he came back. What he did to get himself back was he altered, or this was either after or before, he altered his bullpens. He went to a 70% effort, and he focused on this or that. You remember that?
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously Adam Wainwright has probably earned the right to say, hey, Skip or Mo, this is what I need to be and they're going to do it. The World Baseball Classic's thrown a little bit of a monkey wrench in a lot
that
of people's
does,
things.
Because especially here's why I think it does. And I like the World Baseball Classic. I want this to succeed. But in spring training, you know, you can get a pitcher – And I want your thought on how much this happens. Sometimes you just need to go out and work in a game situation where you just work on a thing. And that thing might be your curve, your slider. And you may have to – you may take your lumps because eventually everyone knows what's coming.
Sure.
And I've seen Jaime Garcia do this where, oh, Jaime looks awful today. No, he's working on his curve.
Yeah.
You know, and they know what's coming. They're sitting on it. You know, he's trying to hit spots. That's how they're evaluating.
Yeah, he could care. Yeah.
But also at spring training at some point, you really do have to flip the switch to, okay, now we're executing.
I need to get people out.
We're executing the full repertoire of pitches. And you know, we're really simulating a regular season situation.
Well, my guess would be based on I feel what you're saying. So if you take what I'm thinking and you take what you're saying, in this particular instance with Wainwright, what I would say is one of two things. Knowing the history, you and I both, what did we watch him struggle with last year? He got knocked around because he did not have what has been his best pitch, which is his curveball.
No, he didn't have it.
So either he has realized that he needs to have more of a feel for it coming out of spring training.
Right.
In this instance, this is a complete guess, by the way. Whether it's him or anybody, I would say if they want more game reps, maybe not extended game reps, just more reps,
right?
It would tell me that he wants to throw a new pitch in a game situation so that he's confident in it when he throws during the regular season. Those would be the only two reasons I could see doing it to deviate.
Mm-hmm.
Or, again, unless you're looking at the season and you say, okay, here's where I want to go and here's where I want to start and go. So, again, a guy like Wainwright has obviously earned that. Then you got to factor in too, Tony, and this, you know, segue of all segues, you know, look at these guys, look what they do, look how important they are to their team, and yet, you know, we spend all winter working out, right? Yeah. These guys do. There is no time off.
No.
Maybe they don't throw for a little while to get the arm.
The arm will get rest,
you know,
but the legs are always,
you know,
in a constant state of prep. They really are.
The news coming out of Boston is not good.
No.
Okay.
No, it's not good for
David Price is on his way to see Dr. Andrews. Here's another ace.
Yes.
Another hard-throwing guy.
Yes.
That, you know, by all accounts we looked at and said, boy, he looks effortless. He shouldn't have any problems, and here we go. So I ask you, we've spent so much time trying to figure out what's hurting these guys. Are we spinning our wheels and we just need to accept that to get the type of performance out of these guys and what it takes to get there, it's just like a car, sooner or later it's going to break down.
When you've worked in a factory before, right?
Minimally at best.
Okay. But you
I wasn't built to work, Tony.
No, I know. You weren't built for that. But in a factory, you use the part all the way to the point where the part wears out, and then you get a replacement part. So if baseball is going to take that attitude of at some point it will break and then we'll fix it, that comes with a cost. That cost is the contract plus the insurance. That, because, by the way, if you don't know this, folks, player contracts are underwritten with an insurance policy.
Some.
Now, you want to talk about pre-existing condition?
You want to talk about how it's hard for you,
you want to talk about premiums and high deductibles?
Well, I was going to say, if you go out tomorrow and buy your 16-year-old a Corvette, there's going to be some places that won't even give you insurance on it. And if they do, it's going to be astronomical.
Right.
Hence, if you have had multiple Tommy Johns, they're not even going to give you insurance.
No, you're not going to get it.
So that's the thing that interests me. So if you look at this.
Do you see what I'm saying?
No.
If you're going to treat them like they are a cog in the assembly line of baseball and that eventually the part will break, you're just going to, and I've heard some GMs say this, it's the price of doing business.
Well, and what's interesting is I'm going to take it a step further. I like your analogy, but I think it is the car, because here's where I'm going with this. Because one car, you and I tomorrow, you and I both sit in the office and we say, you know what? We just hit the lottery. Let's go buy a couple of Ferraris.
Yeah.
So you and I go to a lot. You pick one out and I pick one out. And as we're paying, we sit there and go, huh, check this out. They got the line number on this thing. Jim, mine was made right behind yours.
Right.
Same day.
Yep.
I drive mine off the lot and I have nothing but problems with it. You drive yours for 10 years and don't have a problem.
Exactly.
Now, here's the issue. How do you know?
You don't.
So just like you were saying, if cogs, or if you want to call them cars, who's the Ford Escort and who's the Ferrari? Well, obviously you pay more for a Ferrari. To your point of the cost of doing business, they're paying all these top guys like Ferraris, and I think you just kind of put your hands together and pray that it doesn't happen. But I almost feel like these guys, if you pulled general managers off the record, I'd have a hard time believing that their off-the-record attitude wouldn't be, we hope it doesn't happen, but we're prepared for it if it does.
You game plan for it as a contingency of doing business. At some point, even Henry Ford knew there was going to be a mishap on that assembly line, right?
For sure.
So you have a game plan for it. You prepare your contingency. And in the era of free agency, which is now we're approaching, 50 years, 40 years since the true era began after 76, you want to call it?
Sure.
Okay. Baseball, the currency of the sport, is pitching, specifically young arms that throw hard. That's the currency. And what I see and what I do myself in our fantasy league is I buy as much currency as I can. And that's what I see the draft over the past 20 years gravitate to, is we need the arms. We need the arms. Keep bringing it. Keep bringing it. And because players are going to max out their fastball on almost every fastball that's called for, the inevitable breaking of the car, whether you have a lemon off the lot or not, is going to eventually happen. I don't know that it's escapable for anybody. And this is where Jim and I, folks, have argued really hard before. When Jim says, well, how come no one in the 20s had this problem? My answer is, you don't have elbow problems when you're throwing 78 mile an hour fastballs. There's a reason those pitchers threw that way, so they could keep their jobs. There's a reason Walter Johnson was a great pitcher. He would spot that huge fastball of his around once in a while, and a little ahead of his time. And when you got hurt, guess what? You didn't tell anyone and you kept pitching. Now when you get hurt, No. You don't tell it. You don't keep that a secret. You run right to the trainer, because not only do you want to protect your asset, the club wants to protect you as an asset.
You know what's amazing, though? As we're having this conversation, I just find this fascinating, okay? Here we are talking about, the injuries and the Ferraris, as they will.
That's right.
So, obviously, and you guys are aware, we're in St. Louis. And although we are baseball fans, we're also Cardinal fans. And, we talk about a variety of topics on the show. So, it's only natural for me, right, to look at the box score from the Cardinal game, that even though it's spring training. And as we sit here and talk about Ferraris.
Yeah.
Who do I see pitching 3 innings today in his second major league, in his second minor league start? Bartolo Colon. Just goes out there, 40. He might be 50 for all we know.
Well, he's not a Ferrari. What he is an Opel or a Volkswagen. but not like the Jetta. More like the diesel rabbit.
How
hard does he throw, Jimbo?
But he threw hard when he was younger.
Yes, he did. But what is he? How has he stayed in the game this long?
Well, he's reinvented himself as a pitcher. He's a spot pitcher now.
Spot pitcher.
And he was able to do so.
How did Greg Maddux do it?
He's a freak. He's a freak in nature.
Yeah. Well, partly because he quit maxing out every fastball.
Okay.
And he uses gravity to his advantage. When you're a big fat guy, it's nice to be on a mound that you can fall forward and gain a little momentum.
He might.
That's the Rick Russell theory.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know that there's a great answer. I'm really of the belief that it may happen.
If pitchers as human beings and people, not as employees and cogs in the system, if they are okay with accepting this risk to their livelihood and knowing that they're going to have to go through a surgery on an elbow. You know, it's not heart surgery. It's not cardiac surgery. It's not brain surgery. It's elbow surgery at the end of the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they are okay with this, because, again, it's not like an NFL player. You know, you're not going to get CTE out of playing Major League Baseball.
Well,
okay,
you could.
You
but
could.
Not from that.
But you're not going to. Okay.
Yeah, this is a different
if they are
thing.
Okay with this, then it truly, like other GMs have said, it's just part of the price of doing business.
Well, and you know,
I would prefer not myself to go through it.
Well, sure.
But then again, if I'm getting a check for $12 million for rehabbing, I'm very, very happy.
And David Price has 200 and something million dollars in the bank. And you know, this is, and again, on the flip side of that, there are many, many, many players that don't have any money in the bank and make minor league.
That's right.
Players, there are youth kids out there, so we're definitely not demeaning the whole theory of what's right and wrong when it comes to pitching. I'm just of the belief, and again, maybe this is the old throwing up my hands, I can't take it anymore. That's accurate because that is how I feel. Tim McCarver, who catches a lot of hell from people, and I still don't know why.
Because sometimes he tells the truth a little too much, maybe.
You know, everybody. This is always my favorite about Tim
McCarver. People don't always want to hear it.
Oh, my God. How many times is he going to tell me what I already know? Well, his job is, you got to remember, bud, you may know that, but there's a lot of people watching that don't know. That's
right.
Number one.
They call it an out because.
Okay. Now, he had, in my opinion, okay, I loved it when he said one day he was doing he's now doing Cardinal games. You know, he loves the Cardinals. So
he's ending his career in St. Louis.
He wants to end in St. Louis. So he says, Dan McLaughlin, who does the Cardinals play-by-play on the TV with him,
yep.
and Tim's the color guy, they're talking about a situation in the game, and I think it may have been Wayne. It's really irrelevant who it was. It could have been Santa Claus for that matter. They're talking about a situation. It's getting late. It's seventh, eighth inning. Manager comes out, and McLaughlin says, you know, what's he saying here? Or is this just a situation where he's at that 98 pitches and we're – He goes, well, I don't know what – you know, Tim McCarver very plainly says, well, I don't know what it is he could come out here and tell him. He goes, maybe you're right. Maybe it is because he's at 98 pitches. But for Pete's sakes, he's been dominating hitters all day. He's at 98 pitches. Well, but you got to – and you know, he goes, well, but you know, Tim, you get to that 98 pitches, you know, you got to get that bullpen ready. He goes, why? Well, you know, we're protecting the arm. He goes, well, how are we protecting the arm? By watching the pitch count. We've been watching pitch count now for years because we think that's the problem, and the problem's gotten worse. So it's obviously not pitch count.
No.
It's not pitch count.
It's how you're throwing. It's how.
So, you know, it was a very straightforward.
Gibson used to tell McCarver? He'd do that.
Just get back down there.
Get your ass back behind the plate.
Just get back there and let me throw you the ball. It's just great, by the way. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know where we go from here. I guess my point that I made, and I guess that's where we're at, is as a baseball fan, if you're the Boston Red Sox, you're living it today. The Cardinals lived it a month ago.
But what
Reyes.
Do you do? What do you do to any major investment that you make in your life? What do you do to it? What do you do for it?
Well, you try to protect it.
You try to protect it.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's only natural that. Things like pitch counts, which are perceived as a protection for our major investment, which we don't know if it's a real protection or not. I think what a real protection is evaluating how the guy's throwing.
Sure.
Now, for that, you need real expertise in your pitching coaches. You need real expertise in your catchers to evaluate, is the guy laboring? Is he at a point where his mechanics are going to up the chance of an injury? Or combine a half a year of work to contribute to a major, you know, ligament failure and a Tommy John.
And again, there's more to it than we all even know. I mean, none of us are doctors. We may stay at a Holiday Inn or play one on TV, but, you know.
Can we go bionic? Can we do that, though?
Again.
Why do we need steroids? Can we just get the pitchers the bionic arm?
I mean, if I think there was an episode of the $6 Million Man where I don't know if it was a baseball, but I knew he threw a bowling ball so hard that he shattered the pins. Remember that?
I do.
Yeah, so it's possible. It can happen. It happened to Lee Majors. It happened to him. So I don't know, Tony. I guess we'll see what happens. I mean, here we are.
What else on spring training do you want to see before we get out of here?
Well, again, the World Baseball Classic, I guess, as a baseball fan, my only hope is that nobody goes and gets hurt. Although I'm also one of these guys. Listen,
I could get hurt.
That's right.
Stretching.
That's right. But my point is what I'm saying is that I hope it doesn't happen so that we don't have more food for the fodder, so to speak.
Do you want the classic?
Because I have
never been to a game.
Well,
but I have wanted to go.
Here's what I can tell you.
And I've wanted to see. I want this to succeed. I really do.
Well, because let me tell you something. Here's how I feel about it. We just had the not relevant to the Bleacher Bums, but relevant to all Americans. Let's face it, especially if you're our age. We just had the anniversary of the Miracle on Ice.
Yeah.
Okay. I found it interesting to talk to some hockey people because I also do a hockey show that Cam Jansen, who grew up in the St. Louis, Missouri area and wound up playing for the Blues for a little while,
sure,
who's made his home here, was born in 1984. And if you talk to him about the Miracle on Ice, obviously he's familiar with it, but he'll tell you that his generation, while they can watch the movies or they can do it,
yeah,
the one thing you don't get and that you don't know is how dominant the Russians were then. Like now you see the Russians and, you know, they don't win.
No.
They finish second or third and you think, well, so they was lost in that. But where I'm going with this is, and for all these guys, is this. Yes, those guys, Jim Craig, you know, Mike Ruzzioni, O'Callaghan, every one of those guys, they pulled off a miracle, which is really what it was. No matter what situation that would have been in for them in that moment, it would have been amazing. But what made it unbelievably amazing is the jersey they had on. So where I'm going for the baseball thing is I think that anybody who's blessed enough, good enough, asked to be a part of something like that, anybody that has the opportunity to represent their country, I'm sorry, we can act like it doesn't, but it just means something. And to take it away from the guys because they might get hurt, I think would be wrong because, you know, they are human. They have wants. They have desires. They things that mean something to them. Now, I get the monkey wrench of, well, somebody's paying them a whole lot of money to do a job, and they could go there and screw that up. But, you know, again,
every soccer club in the world of any stature goes through the same exact problem.
And I think Major League Baseball recognizes the need to grow it globally, so they want this to happen. So somebody somewhere has decided that the risk is worth the reward.
Well,
so that's what I'll
to grow with. The game, because here's why I want it to work. For instance, Venezuela has great players. Good players have come out of Colombia.
That people don't know they're from Venezuela.
That's true.
They're from somewhere else.
They assume they're Puerto Rican or Dominican.
That's right.
No, Venezuelan.
Yes.
And Venezuelan has a hell of a baseball.
Yes.
Okay. But if baseball can produce, if Venezuela can produce great baseball players, which have helped make the game better.
Right.
Okay. Why not Brazil? Why not Argentina? Two great sporting nations. Why not nations in Africa? Why not a European nation, you know, and certainly why not more nations in the Far East? You know, because we are seeing, first it was Japan, now it's Korea. And so, you know, why not next? Why not Vietnam? Why not Thailand? You know, why not the Philippines?
Let me give you some Venezuelan players that I guarantee
Favorite Venezuelan.
Well, people are going to say, I thought he was Dominican. Or
yeah.
I thought he was whatever.
Yeah.
Number one, Jose Altuve,
mm-hmm.
Okay, who's one of the best players in baseball right now. The one that people are now familiar with because of the last role, but you would not have known that, is Miguel Cabrera, who's an unbelievable player, of course. You know, all kind. These guys are all obviously top end players. The young third baseman from Philly, Freddie Galvis, Carlos Gonzalez from the Rockies, obviously King Felix.
Yes,
no doubt about it. The real Enciarte, Endar Enciarte, the great defensive outfielder from. So you know you've got all these guys. Salvador Perez, Venezuelan. Victor Martinez is from Venezuela as well.
That's right.
Solarte, the young infielder. Hector Rondon.
You're starting to put together a hell of a club here.
Yes. So, you know, I guarantee you that if a lot of people didn't know those guys are from Venezuela. So you're right. It is an absolute gem of a baseball area for sure.
And I think I want the World Baseball Classic to succeed because at every step of the way through the history of our game, before we finish up today, when the talent pool has expanded, the game has gotten better.
Sure.
When the game went from, sort of gentlemen professionals, then to the working class, it got better. When it went from working class white to include the African American players, it got better. When it went from white and African American players to then include Caribbean players, it got better. It gets better when more talent is available. When you think of the great eras of baseball, 1950s, right? Everyone says golden age. Well, who's in the golden age? Willie Mays.
That's right.
Hank Aaron.
Yep.
In the 60s.
Yep.
Clemente.
Yep.
Bob Gibson. Kurt Flood. It goes on and on. Ernie Banks. They made the game better. Baseball knows this. And one of the places, strangely, that they have to come back to make the talent pool better is the United States.
Yes, and that's been addressed. You know what's interesting to me, too, and maybe we'll talk about this on the next show because we'll be into it a little bit more. I want people to watch something, too. Another thing that I think is important is, you know, our game now has a strong influence of Latin players.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, whether you're like me and you like the old school, although I'm kind of weird because I like the old school stuff, but I actually have no problem with some of the celebrating and things like that. I think you should be able to celebrate a little bit. I also think that if you overdo it and you catch one up and in, or you catch one in the ribs, you'd take your base.
Celebrating is your prerogative. That's right. Be prepared to deal with the consequences of it, though.
But make no mistake about this. You watch these teams, especially the Latins, when they go back and play for their countries, how much fun they have during those games.
They have a ball. That's right. Fun. And the fans are having fun.
So make no mistake about it.
You ever see the fans in Japan?
And again, this is what kills me about, and again, this is a topic for another day because we're up against the time frame here. If you really want to make people watch baseball more and get involved in it more, there are ways to make it more fun.
Yeah.
Without shortening the game.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know.
I don't think that crowd in Japan watching the Hiroshima Cart is concerned about the length of the game at all.
Here you go. Here, I'll just sum it up to you with this. Obviously, we think baseball is America's game. Football would argue that they are not.
Oh, they've been a long time.
Okay, and that's fine. What are they changing? They're going to lighten up on their celebration rule. They realize that, that didn't work.
Yeah.
We got a problem. Right. People are calling us the No Fun League.
It happened for a long time.
So I can tell you this. It's going to happen. But again, be prepared. It's coming. Hey, great discussion today.
Good stuff, Jimbo.
Really enjoying doing this with you, Tony.
We're about a month away, baby.
Oh, I know. And I can't wait till Fish is here with us. I mean, he would love to get in on these conversations. He's such a passionate guy.
Again, it's all you need.
Again, make sure you guys check us out. BleacherBumsPodcast.com is the website. @BumsPodcast on Twitter. Bleacher Bums Podcast on Facebook. If you're a baseball fan, we are going to follow you back. For one half of your team, that's Tony Hubert. I'm Jim Cromer. We are the Bleacher Bums. See you on the field.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.